Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello and welcome in. It is the Monday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the captain's chair today. Not literally. I do not switch, and we've got Bill's seat empty. Symbolically. Mm-hmm. No, Bill's off today. He'll be back tomorrow as he had a medical appointment that conflicted with his ability to do the show today. So Bill will be back tomorrow, but we will press on without him on a Monday, the week before SEC Media Days. And I'm going to mention this a lot this week, Brian. Wall-to-wall coverage of Media Days right here on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com. We're going to have the Max Roundtable. We're going to have On the Line and this show right here, The Drive. At least one of the hosts of all of those shows is going to be live from Radio Row. Doug Amos, Jacob Goings, and me, we're all going to be taking turns on the microphone there at Radio Row. We're going to be going to the press conferences. We're going to be hopefully landing some exclusives with some of the big names that are there. And we learned some more about who's going to be there earlier today. And as we talk with Brian Matthews over the course of the show, we'll talk about who Auburn is deciding to bring to SEC Media Days, as we learned that information today. We learned from everybody in the conference who is going to be there in a year where, mentioned this before, Brian, before we jump into the business, I don't know how many returning superstars there are in the SEC this year compared to previous seasons. Feels like we've had, you know, with Bama's run of quarterbacks and some of the other players who have popped up around the league, Joe Burrow, Jarrett Stidham, you know, for that matter, you know, some guys who had great seasons and returned to college football the following year. You know, I don't know if we have who's the SEC's best shot at the Heisman on paper coming into this season? Is it Daniels at LSU? Is it Joe Milton at Tennessee? Is it one of Georgia's quarterbacks? Like it's more. I'm not even
KJ
sure.
Jefferson,
KJ
Arkansas.
Jefferson. I mean, I wondered on the Max Roundtable earlier today. Like, is Will Rogers the preseason player of the year because of the numbers he's put up over the course of his career at Mississippi State?
Not new offense. He's not.
I know, but I mean, that's another question of who do you? I mean, would you vote a tight end as preseason conference player of the year? Do you have that kind of faith in Brock Bowers?
Brock Bowers, maybe.
I mean, maybe. Honestly, I mean, it's. I can't think of a ton of better candidates who have, who are more. So anyways, it's a bit of a, it's an up and Brock Bowers will be there representing Georgia among some of the bigger stars, both literally and in celebrity terms, as far as who's going to be there in the SEC. Let's take care of the business. This is the Monday edition of The Drive, brought to you by the first hour of The Drive is brought to you by Kia of Auburn and KiaofAuburn.com. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. You can visit them on South College. They also sponsor the podcast, or no, they also sponsor the hotline, which is 334-321-1390. 334-321-1390. If you want to jump in the conversation, you can text the show. 334-564-1840. The Drive text box is presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, which is available however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. Rate, review, subscribe, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center. You can also listen to the show live at ESPNAU.com. And next week, wall-to-wall coverage, 7 straight hours live from Radio Row with the Max Roundtable on the line and this show right here, The Drive. all of that available live, ESPNAU.com. Podcasts and the text box sponsored by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. With me today, because it's a Monday, and especially, you know, I'm grateful always when he gives us some of his valuable time, but on a day where Bill Cameron has a scheduling conflict, I am especially happy to see Mr. Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Brian, how are you?
I am great. It's good to be in here. We got a few things to, you know, talk about today. Hopefully, we get a few calls too.
So. Yeah. Well, I mean, we got what's on your list? You know, you come in with a mental list of things to talk about. We got the draft.
Mm-hmm.
We got media days in a week. We've got we've got recruiting.
Yeah, I got a commitment
with
the weekend.
A commitment. And how about this? I've got some quotes, Brian Matthews.
Oh boy,
I've got some quotes from. I've spoken to let me phrase it this way, because I don't want to blow up his spot. I talked to Ed Rigby about Malik Blockton, and he was incredibly complimentary of the player Auburn is getting. Former Pike Road coach, now he's at Laverne, but he watched a lot of Malik Blockton's evolution. He said, what I can quote Ed Rigby as saying was that Malik Blockton improved as much between beginning of sophomore year, end of junior year, as any player he's been around. Was one of the things he was saying. And also, you know, I mean, I think it's well known that Blockton's an Auburn fan and a guy who this is the school he wanted an offer from. So
absolutely.
What can you tell us about the pickup Auburn gets on the defensive line from Pike Road? Also, something of a legacy, right? Gets to join a family member on the team.
Yeah, Marcus Harris's brother. And I see a lot of similarities between the two. I think there's some Marlon Davidson in there too. Malik is a big body defensive lineman who can also make plays, behind the line of scrimmage, whether it's the sacks or the tackles for loss. He's a playmaking defensive lineman. And I also think he's very versatile. I think he can start out at Auburn at defensive end, you know, playing on the outside a little bit. And as he grows bigger and stronger, I think he can move inside and play some tackle. And I think in pass rushing situations, he can move inside and play some nose. So I just like what Auburn's getting in Malik Blockton. I think he will play as a true freshman next fall. I don't think he's a starter or,
in the rotation as a true freshman, though, usually bodes pretty well for your future. If you're contributing early at the line of scrimmage, you know, that suggests that you're pretty advanced at your age, because a lot of guys take a year or two to pan out, if they pan out at all. But, you know, you were telling us before Hugh Freeze got the job, you were telling us about the importance of both winning recruiting battles for high school line of scrimmage players with high ceilings and winning recruiting battles when they're in the immediate area around Auburn University's campus, however big the circle is that you want to draw around, it was a 150-mile radius, 200, you know, whatever, however big you imagine the territory to be, you want to be winning line of scrimmage battles, especially in that zone. We were talking about it with, before Hugh Freeze got there, when you imagined what the next coach would need to do, when Keldrick Falk was in the mix to be recruited, and Auburn was able to flip him, and now Auburn lands somebody like that in Malik Blockton.
And we got some breaking news: Bryson Ware drafted by the Phillies in the 8th round, number 253 overall. That just happened.
Had not talked about the Major League Baseball draft at all. We will talk about that quite a bit as well, as some history made in the SEC last night, with LSU having the top two players selected in last night's Major League Baseball draft. There's Auburn news around the draft, both with Auburn commitments selected early enough that I wonder how long they're going to be Auburn commitments. Brian, I think that's
well, they're actually signees. And
Auburn signees, that's correct.
Colt Emerson and Kevin McGonigal are going to sign with the Major League teams.
Yeah.
The Major League draft is different than NFL and NBA, right? Kids don't fall because, of some problem. They fall because that team can't meet
signability.
How much money they want, right?
Signability is a much bigger concern. Well, because kids have the option in the Major League Baseball draft, unlike the NBA and NFL drafts, you can't – if you don't like where you're drafted in those leagues, you can't just decide to play another year of college football or another year of college basketball. Baseball players who have college eligibility remaining, or high school players that are in the draft – have the option of either going to or returning to college, which gives them leverage over a Major League Baseball team that players in other drafts don't have. And so, yeah, signability is often a concern, both at the top of the draft. Can we sign this guy, or do we need to pass on somebody for somebody else? They've tried to alleviate some of that with the most recent CBA and sort of, you know, make it pretty clear, you know, what the slots are.
Right.
But those are, you know, there are teams that will look to save money in the draft. There are teams looking to spend a little bit more in the draft and invest that way. And but I think the point you were making, Brian, the money that one would assume those two players are going to be able to get where they were drafted, right? Like those are two players, Kevin McGonigal and
Cole Emerson,
and Cole Emerson, both seemingly are players who were selected somewhere that would lead them to be offered an amount of money that's just too tough to turn down.
Yeah, they're absolutely 100% going to sign with their major league teams unless things just totally break down.
McGonigal's stock went way up in the last few months, right? I mean, from when he was that was a guy national folks were a little bit more focused on in the last couple of weeks as one of the top high school players in the draft. You wonder if, you know, how far he could have fallen where he would have considered playing. That's the other thing, Brian. With high school players, you're signing up to play several years of college baseball. If you agree to play college baseball right out of high school, you're foregoing the draft for a few years. With somebody like, yeah, McGonigal, the amount of money you get offered where he was selected, that's, I mean, life-changing.
Colt Emerson was taken in the first round, 22nd pick by the Mariners, and has a slot value of $3.5 million. Okay, he is not turning down $3.5 million. And the Mariners
and Auburn's not going to make an NIL offer.
Right. And the Mariners wouldn't have drafted him if they didn't have some sort of agreement that was a place that he would sign with. And then McGonigal went in the supplemental round between the first and second, number 37 overall, and that has a slot value of $2.31 million.
Was that Seattle? Do you have the team that took him?
Yeah, and there's Detroit Tigers for McGonigal and Seattle Mariners for Colt Emerson.
Okay, so the pick where McGonigal was taken, that's really close to the pick that the Seattle Mariners earned. I know he wasn't taken with. I think maybe pick 39 in the draft was the Mariners earned a draft pick through Julio Rodriguez winning Rookie of the Year, because that's part of the new CBA, if you promote a top prospect before the season or during the season and he wins Rookie of the Year, they're trying to incentivize teams to not hold their top prospects down.
Right, so now.
If you promote a top prospect and he wins Rookie of the Year, like say Carroll for Arizona, who looks like he's gonna do it, or there's any number of them. Ellie De La Cruz probably if he'd started a little bit earlier, but you can earn an extra first round pick. And think about it, a player like Kevin McGonigal was available. I mean, that's what you could earn now if you potentially if you play your cards right with a top prospect and he wins Rookie of the Year. So yeah, I think it's an interesting bonus to throw out there for teams. Auburn had who else was drafted? Auburn had
Cole Foster went in the third round of the San Francisco Giants,
that's right.
And that's all so far. Two players from the last year's team have been drafted. They're both expected to sign with their teams, and then two of their signees. I think that's it for the signees. I think Auburn's free and clear. The other two guys you were concerned about were left-handed pitcher Bjorn Johnson from up in Seattle and right-handed pitcher Cameron Tilley. Not sure where he's from. But now that we're down into the eighth round where you're talking about – we're going into the ninth round where you're talking about under $200,000 signing bonuses – these top prospects like that are going to school now.
I tell you what else, we're in the area now where, while it's still not an easy amount of money to turn down, we had Jason Caldwell in here last week. I think we talked about this with you as well. Joseph Gonzalez, if selected, you know, would have a decision to make. And now I think
it's that decision's been made now. I think we've also slipped below his number. I don't know what exact number it is, but my feeling was it was around 600,000 or so. You know, maybe half a million. You know, if he comes back to Auburn and has a good season, there's no telling what he could do.
So many teams will, because of the number of players available, so many teams will red flag a pitcher with injury concerns, right? That you know, he's probably either, if it's as a draft pick that a team took a flyer on, if he wants to do it that way, or as a guy who bets on himself to play another year of college baseball, he could do it that way. I would love to see Joseph Gonzalez come back and play another season for Auburn and really bounce back from what he had today. And if he does,
I mean, Auburn's got one of the best starters in the SEC coming back. They've got the big left-hander from UAB has come in.
And what could that mean?
Carson Myers. And they've got a bunch of good pitchers that are going to be a lot better after a year in the system and a year of going through some things.
And what could that mean for Joseph this time next year? Right? Like if he were to have a healthy season where he resembled the best version of Joseph Gonzalez we've seen in the past, if he did that, what is he on draft day next year?
I mean, I think he could finish in the top three rounds. So you're talking about millions of dollars,
which is considerably more than he would make if he were to be selected now and he were to agree to that. So, I mean, it's a gamble, but it's a gamble that could represent him. Now, and you know, there's a downside to it. He could come back and that season could go poorly one of a couple different ways, and he could be in a worse position this time next year. But with someone like Joseph Gonzalez, like, you know, it's one of the things you bet on, right, with a pitcher is the best version of him you've ever seen. Like, maybe he can figure out how to be that all the time, or the injury woes can go away and he can be that as often as he needs to be. And I think with Joseph Gonzalez, like, there's the potential for that. And like you said, it'd be pretty good for Auburn too.
To have
Joseph Gonzalez back in the fold as an ace in the rotation.
And he did have surgery at the end of last season for his back shoulder area. And the rehab was not going to be like a 9-month thing. He will be on pace to be 100% and ready to go for the spring, for the start of the season.
So he wasn't able to go through really anything for teams either, probably. Like there was no working out or trying to show what they would have had to base this on
his sophomore season and the
scouting
one start
and reputation.
Had,
one
start he had this early spring, the first game of the season he started.
Yeah, and you can understand why. As good as Joseph Gonzalez has been in the past, you can understand why a Major League Baseball team would be reluctant to invest a lot of money in someone who when there's been that kind of distance since the last time you saw him, really, especially as a pitcher, and it's, you know, he's dealing with a shoulder injury. Yeah. I can understand why teams would be reluctant to go early on Joseph Gonzalez, and maybe that pays off with Gonzalez. Maybe he's still selected. I don't know, but. I just think the chances there for him to have a huge bounce back potentially for Auburn.
Oh, I 100% agree. This is I think this is good for him, and I think it's good for Auburn because he has a chance to come back and be really good next season, and that will help Auburn, you know, enormously, and it will help him potentially move way up in the draft, and it could be worth millions of dollars to him and his family.
We will be back. That's Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. I'm Dan Peck. Drew at the controls, the capable one, handling the business. Stick around. More Drive when we return.
Life isn't made for...
Welcome back. Monday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Drew at the controls. Tell you what, Brian.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to shortchange the fine folks that you work with and the outstanding website and the services you provide. What can you tell us about what you got going on at AuburnSports.com?
Well, thank you so much. And we're about to hit our busy
most,
time, right?
Most, of,
about
the, to most of the people you work with.
Yeah, there
put it
you
that
go.
Way. I won't name names.
I mean, we've got, of course, we had a commitment this weekend, but we got the big Big Cat weekend coming up in 2 more weeks. I think it's, or is it 3 more weeks? I think it was 3 weeks from Saturday. So it's the 29th. And then that week, there'll be plenty of visitors through that final week of July. And, of course, we've got SEC Media Days next week.
I think Barbie and Oppenheimer come out the week before.
Mm.
Come out the week before Big Cat, right? So we go to Media Days. We come back. That weekend is Barbie Oppenheimer weekend. And then the weekend after that is Big Cat weekend. So that's how you get. I don't know if that's going to be helpful to for remembering it, but I feel like I'm seeing the Barbie marketing everywhere.
Yeah,
Brian, right?
Like they definitely pour some money into
it.
For sure.
This one is saturated, but it's okay. So yeah, Big Cat's coming up. Who's been working hard?
Yeah, we got Jay Tate, Commodore,
yeah,
running the site. We've got me and Brian Stoltz, of course, doing a lot of the football and the sports coverage. We got Caleb on the recruiting coverage, and we got Henry, our intern. So we got a full staff there ready to roll.
So we were talking about SEC Media Days a little bit in the first segment. We talked about this subject earlier on the show in previous episodes. The decision has been made by Auburn as to who will be the representatives from the Auburn football team at Media Days next week. And they go with, I would say, nondescript choices. Nothing against the three players that were chosen. They're seniors, but I don't know of any of them figures to play, at least on paper right now, an outsized role on the team. They're all guys that seem in line for playing time, but not necessarily projecting out as superstars going into this season. But an interesting choice because they're guys who represent the team well. They've represented the team well in the media before. I'd love to get your thoughts on the decision to send tight end Luke Deal, edge incoming transfer from Vanderbilt Elijah McAllister, and interior offensive lineman Cam Stutz, all seniors that will be those will be Auburn's three representatives at Media Days: Deal, McAllister, and Stutz. What do you think, Brian?
I think the word is leadership. I think that's what Eufries is going with in his first season here, right? You know, he can't really take a quarterback because two of them are competing for the starting job. He doesn't really have a history with a lot of these players. So he's going to take these three players that have worked their tails off in the offseason training program right, have stepped up as leaders on the team, have done everything right on and off the field so far. And so that's what he went with. So I think that says a lot about the character of these guys. Luke Deal, we know about. He's been around for a long time now.
Luke Deal was Jason Caldwell's prediction. He said if he had to predict one name that was going to be picked by the team to go to Media Days, his guess was Luke Deal.
That was a good guess, too.
Yeah, I know. And his argument as far as the way Luke Deal sort of universally recognized, you know, across the – I think because of the way he plays, the way he blocks, it's not just offensive players who know, like, the work Luke Deal puts in, and also the fact that he's been there a long time. He's a mature guy. I believe he's married. I should check on that before I keep saying it, but I'm pretty sure Luke Deal's married, but there's a guy who, you know, there have been stories sort of leaking out about what sort of leader he is around. And Cam Stutz is a guy I feel like I've been hearing those kind of things about for a while, too.
Yeah, and Cameron Stutz is going to be one of those five or six guys that are competing for those two starting guard spots once fall camp gets started here in a few more weeks. And he's a guy that's just worked his tail off for 5 years, right? And hasn't had a whole lot to show for it. I think he started a couple of games last year, if I'm not mistaken. But he's right there in the mix for it. And, I think he's a guy that's really welcomed this new staff with open arms and really bought into their culture and the things they want to do here, and really impressed on off the field. And then Elijah McAllister as a transfer from Vanderbilt who came in January and I think has just been spectacular with everything he's done with this team. Promoting the team and getting involved in the community, you know, in just a short period of time. And, of course, working his tail off on and off the field academically, working toward a doctorate. I mean, this guy is just an incredible leader and a great example to his teammates and certainly going to represent Auburn really well up in Nashville.
I was going to say the academic, I could see that becoming a story, sort of Elijah McAllister's academic profile at Media Days next week because, yeah, somebody who is – he earned his master's already, and he's working towards a PhD in his season at Auburn here. He's trying to get a PhD in the College of Education. I don't know how many SEC players are actively working towards a PhD.
Probably not many.
That's a question that could have the number could be bigger than I realize. But I don't know how many guys in this league this year. Maybe COVID has opened it up because it's lengthened some careers.
Well, you know, a lot of them, even when they've got a degree, they'll work on another degree or maybe a master's or a second master. I don't know that in my 22 years I recall a player working on his doctorate while he's still playing. Maybe I'm missing something here, but that's the first one I can recall.
Maybe it's more common at places with medical schools, but going through medical school as a college football player seems yeah, wild. I don't know. Like this is one. So anyways, I could see Elijah McAllister. You know, I feel like this information will come out when Elijah McAllister goes to the microphone next week, and Auburn will probably be out there as far as figuring out how many players in the league have a similar academic profile to Elijah McAllister. We'll talk about some of the other players that were selected around the league. There were some quarterbacks named by other teams. A couple coming in. As the more established stars, some other guys around the conference as well at different positions. So we'll talk about that and more. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Monday edition of The Drive.
And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back in. Hour number one of the Monday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Drew at the controls. Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Bill is taking the day off. He'll be back tomorrow. But in the meantime, love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. What would you ask any of the players at Media Days that Auburn is bringing? It's Cam Stutz, Luke Deal, and Elijah McAllister. Luke Deal, I think there's questions about how the passing offense is evolving, and as a tight end, he's as qualified to answer them as just about anybody. He gets a good look both at the quarterbacks that were competing in the spring and Peyton Thorne, who's been around, and I imagine Peyton Thorne and Luke Deal.
There'll be a lot of questions about Peyton Thorne, I think.
Yeah,
especially toward Luke Deal.
Especially. I mean, I would think people want to know how Peyton Thorne is fitting in.
How's he spinning it?
Yeah, and how the passes look, how's the arm look with Peyton Thorne. With Elijah McAllister, one would think that he would be asked about how a new look defense is taking shape. I mean, Auburn has a lot of new players at every position around the defense, except for, they bring back some experience in the secondary, right? Like most of the, I would say the top seven players in this. Let's think about this. You got Nehemiah and DJ and Keontae and Jalen Simpson and Zion Puckett and Donovan Kaufman, right? It's like most of the key players from last year's secondary, J.D. Rim as well, for that matter. Like most of them are back. Pretty much everywhere else, you've had significant turnover on the roster on the defense. I think Elijah McAllister could be sort of tasked with, whether it's singling out other players that have been making a statement, or just sort of explaining, sort of philosophically, what Ron Roberts is after on defense. But I mean, it's a smart fella. Like, I think he's going to be, clearly the coaching staff trusts him to get up in front of the microphone and explain not just his personal story, which is a good story, right? And with the academic credentials and what have you, but also to explain what could be different and improved. And you don't really want to contrast it with last year's defense, because Elijah McAllister wasn't around on last year's defense, but he can tell you about how things are taking shape since he arrived.
Yeah, I think the main thing that I'm going to be trying to talk to these players about is the situation coming up. I mean, you're talking about a brand new coaching staff. You're talking about a roster that's about 50% turnover, right? How does that come together? What does that look like? What's it like trying to build a team with so many new pieces, right, and so many new things? So I think having those three veterans there, especially Luke Deal, who's played a lot of football for Auburn, right, is going to be interesting. So that's sort of the main focus. I mean, if you're talking about Auburn, there are not any stars coming, right? You can't talk to Jarquez about how many yards he's going to get or.
Do you think, because we haven't talked about, I think for obvious reasons, we haven't talked about the sort of tabloid deal that popped up earlier this summer with Jarquez, but it's I wondered if that influenced the decision not to bring him at all.
Probably.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
That's another topic. I guess if you get into the more unseemly things that could be presented at Media Days, I wonder if any of the players will be asked about that subject. With
it might come up. You never know,
with,
right?
With you know, the however you want to describe that circumstance.
The answer is going to be no comment.
And then that's. I mean, well, no. I mean, you've been around the folks that are providing the players with suggestions about what to say in different situations. So I would trust you to. I would trust you to know, right. in that situation. Yeah,
I think sometimes important questions need to be asked of players and our coaches. But when there's an investigation going on, as far as we know, that's a university-led investigation, and it's, those players aren't going to know anything about it.
Right.
Right. And even if they do know anything about it, they're going to be told specifically not to comment on it. So that's what you're going to get. So
Right. If I guess it could become something of a story. If Hugh Freeze or anybody else sort of no comments, if he's asked directly about Jarquez Hunter's eligibility and sort of no comments, maybe people could read into that that he wasn't willing to reaffirm who knows that was, something else we were talking about during the commercial break is with Hugh Freeze. I think there's the possibility that he's asked about some of the more scandalous or embarrassing details of his past. And I don't know if he's necessarily someone who shies away from that, because he understands and he's understood Brian from the moment he got the job. It's sort of a redemption story. If it's going to be, if he's going to succeed here, he can't change what happened. He can decide how he moves on and grows from it. And I think there could even be people thinking, oh, I'm going to embarrass Hugh Freeze by asking about something from his past. I don't get the sense that he would – I mean, I don't know if that he wants to talk about it in great detail.
Right.
But I don't get the sense that he's embarrassed about it, because it's shaped the lessons he learned from the adversity helped shape who he is now.
Well, this if it does come up, this is probably the last time it's going to come up, right, unless something else happens. Right, because he was hired back in November. He's had his press conference. He's been through spring practice. We're to a different point in his time in Auburn. Right, this is the start of the 23 season. So I can understand why it might come up at SEC Media Days, because a lot of people haven't had a chance to hear him speak or see him in person or ask him these questions. But as long as he doesn't get defensive, as long as he just handles it and moves on, that's the end of that, as far as I'm concerned. And then it becomes just about football, as long as there's not a misstep somewhere.
Talking with Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here on the Monday edition of The Drive. Yeah, Media Day is next week. And once again, we are going to be live all 7 hours next week on Media. I'm not going to be here for all seven of the hours here on ESPN 106.7. I'm just going to do The Drive. We got the Max Roundtable. I think I am going to be drafted into some action with Doug on the Max Roundtable, assuming I wake up in time for that show. Because it's an 11 to 2. Show, so it can be tough for me on some of those days. Although the media, we're gonna be working well before 11 on some of these days, and we'll get. Do we have the times? By the way, do we know when Auburn is? Do we know when Auburn is going on Tuesday?
I have heard that Auburn will be Tuesday afternoon.
Okay, so we know that the other teams going on Auburn's day are Georgia, Vanderbilt, and I believe Mississippi State. Are the I believe Georgia, Vanderbilt, Mississippi State are the other three on Auburn's day. So yeah, we could have some more official information about when Auburn could be taking the microphone on Media Days 1 week from Auburn's going a week from tomorrow. We'll be up there all week long next week here on ESPN 106.7. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. Should mention the baseball, Brian. And not just that the Atlanta Braves are surging into the All-Star break, having throttled the Rays in Tampa Bay this weekend, but the Home Run Derby tonight, which you can also catch on ESPN 106.7 in addition to the coverage on the mothership ESPN. All-Star game tomorrow, that's going to be on Fox, but you can catch our coverage of that on ESPN 106.7 as well, ESPN Radio's coverage of the All-Star game, as the and the Braves with eight different Braves selected to the National League All-Star team. And should be a fun game tomorrow. Should be an exciting Home Run Derby tonight. Pete Alonso looking to become a guy who could be traded, question mark. You know, he's a free agent in a year and a half. The Mets are struggling.
I think very much struggling.
He's the guy that the Mets could get the most for, I think, right now. Maybe Lindor, if they wanted to trade Lindor, but Lindor's got a big contract. Like, they'd have to find a team willing to really pay Francisco Lindor. And then you've got guys like Scherzer and Verlander, who would make sense as a short-term rental, I think, for a team trying to win right now. But Pete Alonso's the really interesting one, because he's probably going to go to free agency in a year and a half. But he makes sense as a rental if the Mets want to give up one of these underachievers in baseball that is surprisingly in the playoffs, that wants to inject some real power into their lineup. You know, if you're Arizona, or if you're San Francisco, or if you're Florida, if you're the Miami Marlins, like, to suddenly stick a Pete Alonso into that lineup would be massive for them. So Pete Alonso in the home run derby tonight could be his final home run derby as a Met. He's also, I don't know if, has anyone won three of these things? I don't know all that much home run derby lore. So
I think Griffey's won a few. I don't know how many.
Yeah, and
back
I know,
in the day,
I think Bonds had a couple of home run derby titles. I don't know what the rules are as far as if he would
kind of stopped watching it.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun in the moment, but I struggle to tell you like details of a home run derby from. I remember when Josh Hamilton hit all those home runs at Yankee Stadium. Like that was a fun one. Like that was Sammy Sosa back in the Drew's nodding his head.
Yeah.
There's a if you YouTube it, kids. There's a Sammy Sosa had a home run derby back in the late 90s, and you won't think it's real. If you don't know what I'm talking about and you watch it on YouTube, like he's hitting these balls into space. Like it's the most incredible sight. People are just like the commentators are just laughing at how far these balls are going from Sammy Sosa. So that was the good old days of the late 90s in home run derby lore. Yeah, that's don't ask any questions. That was a lot of fun. 334-321-1390 is the number to dial. I'll tell you what, we'll have some I think we got the SEC schedule stuff when we come back. We'll talk about that. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to the Monday edition of The Drive.
AU.com.
Welcome back. Monday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Drew at the controls. Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com hanging out with us, doing a great job as always. Yeah, we got the we got the schedule here for Media Days, and we'll have Auburn going. Let's see if I can pull this thing up. Have Auburn going in the afternoon, right? Is what you had?
Yes, Tuesday afternoon.
That's right. Auburn and Mississippi State are the Tuesday afternoon group. Vanderbilt and Georgia are the Tuesday morning group. LSU, A&M, and Missouri are going on Monday, along with the SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey and I believe it's the Director of Officiating usually goes as well. No, he's going on Tuesday. So John McDade is on Tuesday. So on Monday, it's Commissioner Sankey along with LSU, Texas A&M, and Missouri. On Tuesday, it's Vanderbilt and Georgia in the morning, Auburn and Mississippi State in the afternoon. Auburn will be finishing up around 4:10, so I might be a little bit late to coverage on Monday if I am going to keep working to get as much of the info as I can from Luke Deal, Elijah McAllister, and Cameron Stutz.
You're going to be up there, right? Is Bill going to be here Monday?
Bill's going to be here in the studio all 4 days, okay. And I'm going to be up in Nashville.
Gotcha.
I think we're leaving on Sunday to be there all 4 days. So, yeah, if you want to pop in on Monday,
yeah, I can do that.
Go right ahead.
Because I'm not going to go up till Tuesday.
So. Right, and then on Tuesday, I don't know, join us whenever on Tuesday, but I know you'll probably be pretty busy once the players and coaches get done there at 4
be
o'clock. If you want to pop in anytime next week between 4 and 6, you're welcome to. But if you can't, because it's Auburn's day, we might have other stuff. You know what I mean? Like we should be able to power through. But we'd love to hear from you. Love to get to see you up there in Nashville. Looking forward to the fun. And that's going to be I think it's the two coaches that are making their debut for their teams are going to be going at the same time. Hugh Freeze and Zach Arnett are the two first year coaches in the conference. This year, unless I'm forgetting somebody, those are the two guys that are first year coaches this year in the league, and they'll both be going in the afternoon shift on Tuesday. Wednesday, you've got Bama and Arkansas in the morning. Bama, by the way, is bringing J.C. Latham, Dallas Turner, and Kool-Aid McKinstry as their three players. Bama and Arkansas will be going. K.J. Jefferson leading the way as one of the big three for Arkansas. In the afternoon, Florida and Kentucky. Billy Napier, the embattled Florida head coach going into year two. And you've also got Mark Stoops, who is the head coach going into this year 10, year 11, as the head coach there in Lexington. Thursday, the final day, you'll have Ole Miss and Tennessee. It's going to be a lot of interest, I suspect, because of the Nashville area, especially with Tennessee being coming off the season they just had. So that might juice things up, because sometimes it can get a little quiet on the last day of media days. There's a lot of folks who aren't. The people who aren't, what I've noticed is on the last day of media days, unless you're covering that team, you've probably left already. So like a lot of, I would think that Ole Miss, South Carolina, and Tennessee in the Thursday shift of media days, there will be interest because it's Tennessee, but it could be the same thing where maybe that fourth day, some of the more regional reporters are ready to go home. But that's a good group there with former Tennessee head coach Lane Kiffin, who still has friends and enemies in Knoxville based on the last time Ole Miss was there. And also Josh Heupel, who had that outstanding season last year for Tennessee. And now there's a lot of excitement about Tennessee. They probably go in, I would think, as the third or fourth team in the SEC in most polls going into this season, depending on how you view LSU and Bama, for that matter. Right. Like Georgia, I would imagine, is going to be a preseason one.
Well, if they're not, they'll be so disrespected. They'll I don't know how they'll survive.
Yeah, but I mean, you're going. You know, we were saying this last week, Brian. I mean, there are very few things you can do as a modern college football coach where it's like, yeah, Nick Saban hasn't done that. Like he hasn't pulled that one off. Back-to-back-to-back national championships would be one of those things. And Georgia has won two of them. They come into this season as the favorite to win a third one. And Kirby Smart will be he'll be wearing the championship, the title belt going into media days for a second year. And, yeah, looking to pull off I know, like, Minnesota claims three championships in a row in, like, the 30s or something. But, like, in the modern era of college football, we have not, and especially since we started playing them on the field, like USC got close because USC had the contested title in 2003, where they won the AP championship but were left out of the BCS title game. They won the BCS title in 2004, and they had the lead in the BCS title game in 2005. Vince Young comes back in the fourth quarter and Texas wins that game. USC was, depending on if you view just winning an AP national championship as a national championship, depending on how you view 2003, USC was close to three straight national championships, but they didn't pull it off. They couldn't win that third game. I forget has Bama had, I think, 11 and 12, right? Were Bama's back-to-back national championships, and then the third was foiled in Auburn in a somewhat famous field goal gets run back. There's a whole thing that happened when Bama was defending back-to-back national champion. But it was, so teams have gotten, and that 2013 Bama team, they might have gone all the way had they won that Iron Bowl that day. So, I mean, there was another team that got really close, foiled by one game. But Georgia's trying to be the first team in the truly modern era of the sport, right?
Can you name the other team that's won three in a row?
Is it Minnesota?
I thought this would take a while.
No, I've heard about this, but I think they're not, like, they're somewhat contested, right? Like, I don't know if they're three sort of undisputed, like it was, because it's back in the 30s.
And 34, 35, 36. Yeah. I don't know how disputed they were back then.
I don't remember either. But it's
maybe Bill remembers. Oh, sorry,
come
Bill.
On,
that was
wow.
Mean. That was
Brian
that was
said
so
it,
terrible.
Bill.
I'm sorry.
334-321-1390. Oh, whoa. Yeah.
We always give him a hard time.
Okay, there you go. All right. I like Philip. He's a good guy. We'll be back with more Brian Matthews in the house. Stick around. You are listening to The Drive.
Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Monday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com hanging out. Drew at the controls, the capable one. Love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That is the Kia of Auburn hotline. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. You can text the show, 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box. That's presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast. However you listen to podcasts, all presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Hour number two of the Drive brought to you by the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care. Locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And I should also mention, and I want to be coy about this, Brian.
Yes.
Big news on the horizon for this radio show and or the larger Auburn Network group. The big news coming, so I can, you know, that's exciting stuff. We'll see.
Announce any day now.
Yeah, and any moment, you know, there could be something huge hitting the wire. So just, you know, be on alert for that. As we and speaking of Auburn Network, we'll have Media Days coverage all week long next week, Monday through Thursday. Auburn going on Tuesday as Hugh Freeze takes his show on the road. Three players with Hugh Freeze: Luke Deal, Elijah McAllister, and Cam Stutz have been chosen as Auburn's three representatives, three seniors that will accompany Hugh Freeze to Nashville next week and speak on Tuesday. Malik Blockton, talked about him a little bit at the top of the show, Brian, but Auburn adding a class of 24 recruits, somebody who with a connection to Auburn, Marcus Harris's brother, and someone who, you know, there have been rave reviews about him throughout his recruitment. Sounds like a really quality pickup for Auburn.
Very quality. I think Malik Blockton is a big body defensive lineman that can make plays behind the line of scrimmage, tackles for loss, sacks.
You compared him to Marlon Davidson a little bit earlier in the show?
He's got some Marlon in him. He's got some Marcus Harris's brother in him for sure. And, you know, you mentioned his coach talking about how much better he got. You know, I've heard that he's got a tremendous work ethic, which, again, plenty of Marcus Harris in him, right? Because Marcus works his tail off all the time. I'm just excited about his future. I think Auburn, this is a big need for Auburn in the 24 class of defensive linemen. They don't have a lot of young, good defensive linemen other than Keldrick Falk, and we'll see how some of these other guys they brought in this class develop. But I'm talking about before this class came in, they'd struggle in that area a little bit.
You know, and it's cool if you want. You know, I got nothing against a kid who wants to go far away. You know, a kid who says, you know what, the best thing for me is to create some distance between everything I grew up around and myself, and I'm going to go pursue college athletics somewhere very far away. But when you hear a story about someone who's local or kind of local who really wants that Auburn offer and it seems like they're good enough to play in the conference and contribute, this is what we were hearing about J.C. Hart, right? Before the Auburn offer came down, Brian, there were stories about how badly J.C. Hart wanted to play for Auburn, and the, you know, the notion that he made his, I think someone called on the Drive and told us the story that, you know, he used to make his parents drive out of the way so we could look at Jordan-Hare Stadium and get a and imagine what it was like to play there someday. When you hear stories like that or how badly Malik Blockton wanted that Auburn offer, it makes you feel good about the kind of players that they're bringing in, because they're kids that are getting to live it. I mean, they're not just. And this isn't charity, because there are other schools that wanted these guys. Like, it's not as though Auburn is just singling in, oh, let's make this kid's dream come true, and there's nothing in it for us. Because these guys are also high-level football players that could end up being really big additions to the team. But it's easier to root for, I think, for a player like, when you get the sense this is a local kid getting to live a dream by being an Auburn football player like J.C. Hart, or I would say like Malik Blockton. Absolutely.
And it's exciting to see that, right? You love to see it. I think both those guys are going to be good players. J.C. Hart, talk about him potentially getting a first look at wide receiver. Actually, I haven't checked on that. I need to. Auburn did sign 4 transfer receivers, so we'll see exactly where he ends up. I'm sure he'll get a look on both sides of the ball, and we'll see how it works out for him.
Not to hijack the Malik Blockton talk and turn it all about J.C. Hart, Brian, but he was I think it was Ferguson who suggested, because he covered a couple of J.C. Hart's games for the paper, and suggested that if J.C. Hart comes to, he's an example of a kid where, and he did go to camps, but if he had played at a bigger school, more recruiting services would have done their homework on him, and maybe he would have been, you know, a bigger recruit than the one on paper, right? Like he'd possibly be a more highly touted guy. But this is someone who, like, don't let the star rating fool you. Rather, this is someone who potentially could contribute kind of early as well. And athletically, there's a combination of size and speed that you like.
I do. I really do. For J.C. Hart, just a terrific athlete, right? And also a very good student who is going to represent Auburn really well on and off the field. I could see him 3 or 4 years from now being one of Auburn's 3 guys they take to SEC Media Days. That's the type of young man they're getting. And I think Malik Blockton has similar type of I don't know about his grades. I haven't asked, but I think as far as being a leader.
High character.
Yeah, a character, hardworking, represent Auburn well on off the field. I think he has some of those same traits too. So I think in both those guys. And you mentioned, I think, when we started this show about how important it was for Auburn to recruit better in its home area, right? It's fine. Auburn has been really good by losing the state to Alabama or at best splitting the state with Alabama, right? And going to get great players in Georgia and Mississippi and Florida, et cetera. Auburn has thrived doing that. But when they lose the state to Alabama and then Clemson, Georgia, LSU come into the state and take more great players, that's when Auburn can't compete with those schools anymore. So that's got to stop. So those were two important pickups. Cam Coleman, just down the road, a little bit disappointing. But I'm telling you, that one's not over yet. So we'll see how that one turns out. He committed to Texas A&M last week. Surprised, I think, a lot of people in the industry, but you know, Auburn's going to continue to recruit him, I believe.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about Texas A&M, and you know what, I think people jumped immediately to NIL with Texas A&M, you know, landing a recruit like Cam Coleman. I mean, Patrick Nix did play for Jimbo Fisher, as we talked about last week, so there are other connections there as well. But one would think that A&M would need to be able to really make an enticing offer on that front, and present a lot of other advantages too over the other schools after Cam Coleman. But that's and would you say that even if the Cam Coleman recruitment isn't over, does it change Auburn's need for Perry Thompson when Cam Coleman goes to or commits to another school? Does that make it more important for Auburn to potentially land Perry Thompson?
In some ways, I think Auburn needs both. I think when you look at Hugh Freeze's offense and you look at you know, how they want to be a big play offense, right? The receivers are so important in that. And that's why they went out and got 4 transfers to try to help this team right away. There's going to be a ton of turnover at that position next year and the year after, because all these guys they brought in, and a lot of the guys on the team are either seniors or juniors. They're not going to be around for a while. They've got to get some really talented young receivers into this program. Ryan Williams, who's just a rising junior, committed to Alabama, son of Ryan Williams. His dad also played at Auburn. That's another kid that I think Auburn has a decent chance of flipping to, and that Auburn's going to continue to recruit until the bitter end, of course. So, yeah, I think Auburn needs all of them, to be honest with you. If they're going to have the type of offense that Hugh Freeze wants, if he's going to put in NFL these top wide receivers as he's done before at Ole Miss, those are the kind of guys you got to win recruiting battles for.
Hugh Freeze cannot. I will say this, Brian, and I rarely speak in absolutes about these things. Hugh Freeze cannot recruit receiver the way the previous couple of Auburn coaches have recruited receiver and have his plan work, right? Like, based on what we've got right now, like, yeah, he would need to – I mean, the notion that Auburn hasn't had a first-round pick at wide receiver since the 80s, there are – I mean, Darius Slayton is maybe – I mean, no. Let me think about this. Anthony Schwartz, I think, gets on the field a little bit in – where is that? Is that Kansas City?
Seth Williams was a really good player for Auburn. You know, it didn't work out.
I don't know how much Seth is, you know, on the field for his Is he in Denver on the practice squad? I thought.
Yeah, I don't know.
Darius Slayton.
But Darius Slayton's a good
player. Darius Slayton plays for the Giants, but you really don't have much of an Auburn presence at receiver in the NFL.
No.
Right now, and I think it's fair to it's fair to say like that's a position where you can't let teams on your schedule, especially, get all of the guys with NFL futures in the region you can't go over compared to.
And that's become such an important position in college and the NFL, right? That's a position now that's drafted high that, you know, teams put a high priority on because you've got to have those great playmakers at receiver to win football games. You just have to. The big play is so important now in these games, and it's the receivers that make most of those.
Well, I mean, The best teams in both college football and the NFL, and I don't want to speak too broadly there, but it does feel like a really explosive, efficient passing offense is sort of a common thread with all of them, and the different things that requires: high level quarterback play, quality pass blocking, receivers who can make plays and get, like, all of those things sort of work in tandem. And when you've got those receivers and there's a select few number of them, it's so important that when players like that come along in high school and they're near you geographically, you got to find a way to win those battles. And it's the thing about recruiting regionally, Brian, is, like, yes, you would think you have an advantage because you're closer to the area and you can play on the, you know, close to your family and, maybe the kid's grown up dreaming of playing. You know, like, there's any number of reasons why recruiting regionally is, if you have players in the area, makes sense. There's also the thing of, like, if you don't recruit in the region, if the team is built off of players that aren't from the area, especially now in an era where players can leave and retain their eligibility and we're seeing more movement than ever before among veteran players, if you build a team of non-locals and things start to go bad, that's a bunch of kids that are about to get homesick. Like, there's a bunch of kids that are going to say, hey, you know, and so that's the other risk of trying to, I get the appeal of recruiting nationally, but you better be competitive for the players in your region when players in your region that can help you are on the table. Like, you gotta be competitive, or else it feels like you're playing from behind immediately. Like, you're trying to play catch up on key things on your roster that you need to have that you probably shouldn't be trying to find in the bargain bin. Like, those are things you need to be prioritizing.
I agree. And, you know, Auburn has got to recruit East Alabama, Montgomery, West Georgia, Southeast Alabama, Southwest Georgia, better. There are tons of great players in just, that 200-mile radius or whatever it is. And they just got to do a little bit better job. And I think this staff is working toward that. I'm not talking about this staff. I'm talking about previous staffs that really, I thought, dropped the ball in many ways recruiting those areas.
Yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, when you get into, people talk about Auburn's recruiting of the state of Georgia. But when you get near the Georgia border, right, like up and down the state, whether it's in Phoenix City, south down to Eufaula, mm-hmm. like there's, and you know, in into the Wiregrass and closer to the Florida border, like there's football with players that have college, not all of them, but I mean there is the kind of talent there that you need to take a look at if you're a school in Auburn's position.
Yep, and the other area I think Auburn has to get back involved in more heavily is South Florida. So many great players from South Florida have come to Auburn and had success.
That was now was and, that before Tuberville? Was that much of a thing, or was that really something Tommy?
It started with Pat Dye and the Dillard Five.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's other players besides that, but that continued through Tuberville, right? You know, Eddie Graham was a great recruiter down there.
Yeah, the Fort Lauderdale-Miami connection, you know, to throughout Tuberville's tenure for sure. And then, I mean, Cadillac Williams has ties to the Tampa Bay area, which, you know, would lead you to think he can do some things, you know, and has. You know, he's brought some players in from the state. But, no, I agree. That's one where – although the secret's out on South Florida, right, as a talent hotbed.
Well, like, I mean,
everybody.
But everybody's known that for 20 years. Yeah. This is, you know, it's just a matter of having the connections down there and going down there and getting it done. And that's an area I think Auburn has had success in the past and needs to try to exploit a little bit more.
Do you think more teams, and I think Auburn would join this list, do you think more teams are going to view Texas with Texas and Oklahoma in the league? They're going to view it as maybe an easier sell to get Texas kids to come play in the SEC than it was previously, because you have now not only do you have A&M and Arkansas and some other regional, but now Texas and Oklahoma, you know, the flagships, you know, those are coming from the Big 12 to the SEC. I would just wonder if SEC schools are thinking maybe that puts more Texas kids in play for the conference than before, because now they'll get to play Texas and Oklahoma if they come play for us.
Yeah, and I do think so. I mean, you've had A&M, now you're adding Texas, so yes, there's Texas is one of the biggest states to produce prospects in the country and produce NFL players. So I think it opens it up. But, you know, if you're Auburn, to go get a great player from Texas, I mean, you might find like a guy that's pretty good that maybe the other teams don't want as much and maybe he ends up being really good. But I'm talking about a great player that everybody wants. You got to beat out Texas, Texas A&M, Oklahoma. Then you got to beat out LSU. You got to beat out Alabama. You got to beat out all these other national teams that are recruiting him just to get to Auburn. So that unless you've got a personal connection there or unless you've got an in, sometimes that can just be a waste of time.
Unless you just made the playoffs or something. Maybe that's going to be a little bit tougher of a sell. Now that's understandable. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. I'm Dan Peck. We'll be back. You're listening to the Monday edition of The Drive.
Franklin Tire and Auto.
Welcome back. The Monday edition of The Drive, Dan Peck in the studio, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com hanging out with us, Drew at the controls, Major League Baseball All-Star Game, the Home Run Derby tonight, Brian, how many Home Run Derby participants can you name of tonight's competitors?
Boy,
how many?
You're putting me on the spot.
How many of
zero?
The folks? Really, is that right? You can't name any?
I'm sure I could try to.
The Home Run Derby bracket, Brian.
I mean, is Acuna in it?
No.
Okay.
It was a good guess, though. The Home Run Derby bracket is Luis Robert Jr. Now, here's my thing. I'm largely unfamiliar with AL baseball. Like, I'm in a National League-only fantasy league. I do not follow the AL the way I should. Luis Robert Jr. is an outfielder on the White Sox. He is the one seed. Adley Rutschman, I know. Now, Adley Rutschman was one of the biggest recruits in baseball. He's a catcher for the Orioles, and is he hit a ball about 470 something feet earlier this year during a Major League Baseball. I believe the furthest a home run has traveled this year in Major League Baseball was a home run hit by Adley Rutschman, who's in that thing. Adolis Garcia and Randy Rosarena. Now Rosarena, I saw play earlier this year with the Rays, and I know he's good. Mookie Betts, you've probably heard of. He's an outfielder for the Los Angeles Dodgers, and he is going to be in the Home Run Derby tonight representing the Dodger Blue. How about this as a matchup? Because they got that bracket format now, Brian, where it's like one, you know, it's the guys face off head-to-head, and the four advance. It's going to be Mookie Betts versus Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in a head-to-head showdown. Mookie Betts has been absolutely crushing the ball, although I don't know how much you project – like how well a guy has been performing in Major League Baseball to how well he's going to do in a Home Run Derby.
Right.
Because he's, you know, how well he's been hitting like Major League pitching off of competitive pitchers and games versus what he can do in sort of a power hitter's version of a slam dunk contest almost. But Mookie Betts has been, you know, with the health problems Mookie Betts has had over the last couple of seasons where, you know, a nagging wrist or a back or something, does feel like an odd choice to participate in the Home Run Derby. I don't know how taxing it is for your body, but I probably wouldn't want a high-priced player who's been dealing with injuries recently, or not like that. I'd be a little bit nervous about.
If I was his coach, I wouldn't let him participate.
Yeah, I'm a little. You know what I mean? I wonder if there was any conversation within the Dodgers organization about Mookie Betts doing the Home Run Derby this year. And then the final matchup, talked about Pete Alonso a little bit earlier on, Mets first baseman who could be on the move? Question mark. You know, if the. I mean, the Mets. Would look to maybe, you know, they could get a lot for him. I mean, that's a huge bat to potentially add to a contender at the trade deadline. And he's a young impact player, you know, for a Mets team that, you know, might want to, you know, might tear down and rebuild. You know what I mean? Might look to go younger where they can and keep the franchise sort of the tent poles in place.
What about Matt Olson? He's second in the majors in home runs.
I believe Matt Olson declined participation. I don't know exactly if he was. Oh, and the final one, Pete Olson. It's Pete Alonso versus Julio Rodriguez. Julio Rodriguez, who I believe did he win it last year, or was he was great in it last year. Soto won it last year, I want to say, but it was Julio Rodriguez and Juan Soto in the finals. Rodriguez is the reigning AL Rookie of the Year. We were talking about him earlier. He was the guy that got called up. Because he won Rookie of the Year, Seattle got an extra draft pick in this year's draft just last night. Speaking of last night's draft, mentioned that at the top of the show, the big headlines regarding the SEC, record-breaking, well, I mean, with both of the LSU players going 1-2, I mean, that's that's never happened before with the same school
as
1-2 in the Major League Baseball draft. And probably correct as far as, I mean, those are the top two guys and maybe in the order that you would take them if you were a team.
I would never pass on the pitcher, Keynes, never. Yeah, yes. Not in a million years. I don't care if I had five all-star starters, right, and the best reliever in baseball, I'd still take Skeens number one.
Yeah, Paul Skeens was someone who, I mean, like I thought maybe because Pittsburgh, if they were thinking long-term, like maybe there's an argument for an outfielder if you feel like you're a long way away from contention. But I don't know. Like, to me, the Skeens was so overpowering that it was harder and harder with every start to make an argument for anybody else. And that's in a draft where, I mean, and I'm not an expert on these things, but it sounds like Dylan Cruz would have gone first overall in most Major League Baseball drafts. Just happened to be in a draft this year with Paul Skeens. Wyatt Langford, the Florida outfielder, is the kind of prospect that I think a lot of people say in most drafts. This guy, like, I think all three of them will be consensus ranked ahead of the first pick in last year's draft. A year later, like, there are three guys in this draft, maybe four, depending on how you view Max Clark, that will immediately jump ahead of anyone from last year's draft on the prospect rankings. Jackson Holliday has had like a meteoric rise in the last year or so in prospect rankings. Son of former Major League Baseball player Matt Holliday.
Yep.
But for the most part, like, these are three guys who, I mean, I think ESPN's prospect guy Brian says that Skeens, Cruz, and Langford, the moment they sign with their teams, become three of the top 12 players in the minor leagues.
Well,
three of the top 12 prospects.
Here's my thing with Skeens. I think if you were not concerned about, you know, overpitching him or his pitch count or whatever, I think he could throw in the majors this year. I think he has that ability. I don't think he needs a long time in the minors. Maybe none. I just think he can go straight to the majors.
The two examples I remember of,
maybe even Cruz too.
The two examples I remember of guys getting to baseball extremely quickly. There was
David, I've got an old one for
okay,
you.
Okay, so David Price, I remember seeing in person when he was at Vanderbilt, and then later that year, he was coming out of the pen for the Tampa Bay Rays, having just been taken first overall in the draft that summer. He was in the, I believe he was in the play, he closed a playoff game, I think, for the Tampa. I mean, you think about that, right? I mean, to go from college ace to closing a Major League Baseball playoff game later that season. And David Price, who, did he retire? I want to say David Price just completed his career after last season. But that's a guy who I remember making that jump. And then there's Ryan Zimmerman, who was a hitter, But Ryan Zimmerman was a third baseman, Virginia or Virginia Tech. I forget exactly where he played. It was somewhere in the ACC. And he was up. He was drafted by the Nationals, and he was up when rosters expanded that September, and then was in the infield for most of the next decade for the Washington Nationals. So it happens. And that wasn't an example where the Nationals were in contention. I think they just saw a kid in the minors they thought could help them right now, and they didn't care that he was just drafted that summer. They gave him a shot. But I agree with you. Like, Cruz and Langford and Skeens all seem like guys, and I wonder if it'll become more commonplace because NIL makes it easier to stay in college baseball a little bit longer, and the development that you get in college baseball is comparable, if not better, to what you're getting in some of the minor league systems around the pros. Like, I wonder if we'll see more guys that seem ready to make the jump immediately into Major League Baseball, because we got three this year in Skeens, Langford, and Cruz that all seem like they're ready to go. And they go 1, 2, 3 in last night's draft.
Mine was Bob Horner with the Braves back in the day. I think he went straight from high school to the majors. Yep, 1978. I'm looking it up right here. Yeah. He went from Arizona State to the majors. Yeah, to the Atlanta Braves. Yep, third baseman.
Last pitcher to go first overall in the Major League Baseball draft was Casey Mize out of Auburn in 2018. First overall pick from the Tigers. And let me see where else I can pull up. You know, I'll tell you what.
Jim Abbott did in 89.
Oh, is that right?
Garrett Crotchett.
You know, how about this?
In 2020, from Tennessee, the Chicago White Sox.
Well, you know, Wyatt Langford, because of the Max Clark pick at 103, Wyatt Langford went fourth overall to Texas. They're in the hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wonder if a player like Wyatt Langford is in Major League Baseball before the season is over.
You figure the Pirates, maybe they don't want to risk it. They want to get that extra year with him, whatever, contract stuff. But, of course, to do that, they'd have to wait until September of next year. Is that right? Is that how it works?
To do what?
To bring up Skeens. It's the Pirates that drafted him, right?
The Pirates could bring him up. He could be on the opening day roster next year.
But to get that extra year for the contract or whatever, it would be.
Although, to get an extra year of service time, they could do that. Although, we were talking about that rookie of the year thing.
Right.
I mean, if you bring him up opening day and he wins you rookie of the year, he could win you a draft pick in the 30s. Yeah. And is that more valuable than an extra year of service time potentially for a player like that, especially if you make some sort of financial deal to keep him around? Like that's sort of, teams are, because a lot of players had that, all right, we're going to wait until May or September, we're going to wait until May or June to bring him up to get an extra year of service time out of him. And to dissuade teams from doing that, they have rules like that. We'll talk about some of the other draft picks when we come back. You are listening to the Monday edition of The Drive. Stick around. Welcome back. Monday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Drew at the controls. I was on the Max Roundtable earlier today, and Doug asked me about two coaches who are in different degrees of trouble, but I think both of their statuses are fairly uncertain at the moment. One of them is Bob Huggins, who put out
another press release. I have to find it, but
like, the notion that Bob, I think it, the thought that he would want to coach again is understandable, but and the circumstances regarding his release, it's an email account with his wife's name on it or something, was how he notified the university of his resignation, but. One, I wonder, Brian, if West Virginia could have simply fired him had he not resigned after the DUI incident earlier this summer. And two, the thought that he could come back after resigning, the thought that he could just sort of like, and never mind, that one. I said on the Max Rand, the thought that he could Jay Leno, the current coach, and just get his job back just seems. And maybe he could coach somewhere else. Maybe, if he takes a year off and rehabilitates himself appropriately, like I think that the thought that he could coach somewhere else doesn't seem all that far fetched. But the notion that you're going to get your job back at West Virginia after a month or something, like, just didn't. I just I yeah, I was shocked to see that story. And I imagine West Virginia is going to dig in their heels and do what they have to keep Bob Huggins from getting his job back.
I guess, but there seems to be still a lot of support up there for him. So we'll see. It seems like a really messy situation.
Yeah, that's a new AD, Ren Baker, who didn't hire Bob Huggins. He's he came over from North Texas, and I think he's, I don't know, like this, that's a guy who was widely respected in the industry before he got this West Virginia job. And I think that if he thinks there's a backlash now to keeping Huggins out of the job, what I think he would realize is that if he were to cave and give Huggins the job now, there'd be a backlash the other way from people he's not hearing from. And that sort of brings us to the Northwestern thing, because Pat Fitzgerald is, I mean, his status right now is up in the air because he was suspended for a couple of weeks by the administration at Northwestern following revelations of hazing allegations.
I think they were hoping that would be it. They did the investigation. They put out a release. He's suspended. Blah blah blah. That's the end of it. And that's just blown up.
No, it's not the end of it. And it sounds like my guess is that influential people around Northwestern have called the higher ups in the last couple of days, expressing their concern that Pat Fitzgerald was only suspended for a couple of weeks, or seemingly got a slap on the wrist for something that sounds pretty serious and pretty significant. It reminds me a little bit of, and I don't want to equate the two completely because it's different. But when DJ Durkin, do you remember what I'm talking about?
Oh yes.
Like Maryland first tried to punish DJ Durkin with like a week, 2 weeks suspension or something.
And then
there was an outcry over that, and the president had to backtrack. The president of the University of Maryland had to backtrack and say, "Oh, it's not 2 weeks. We're going to reevaluate and figure it out." And pretty soon, like there were several people cleared out of Maryland in that mess. I wonder if in the case of Pat Fitzgerald, if the fact that now you've got the president sort of stepping back and saying this original punishment was maybe inappropriate. Like, I just wonder if there was a firestorm after the initial punishment from people who thought that like the school needed to take a harder look at this. And I just, by the day, it's felt less and less likely that Pat Fitzgerald is going to be able to keep his job here. I've thought that this thing seemed to be trending away from him, because separating the fact that they're not winning on the field, right? Like that it's, what, 4 wins in the last 2 years, I think, at Northwestern. They were 1-11 this year after winning the opener. They lost the next 11 games. You know, I think people, like, there would have been an outcry if you fire Pat Fitzgerald for not winning on the field, because there's this belief that he was doing it the right way, and he was raising a team that did not make academic concessions for the university and did not embarrass the university in any way. If it turns out he's not doing it, you know, quote unquote, the right way behind the scenes, and he's not winning on the field, like, I understand he's a legend within the program and he took over in a very difficult situation nearly 2 decades ago. I could see this one. Like, what's your read here on Pat Fitzgerald and Northwestern? Because I'm starting to think that they're going to have to separate.
I would not be surprised if that happens, and I'm not going to pretend to know everything that went down there.
I'm just basing this on public reports too. Like, I don't have inside info or anything.
Yeah, the one thing I will say about everything that's come out is I think it was absolutely ridiculous that a statement was put out. I don't know exactly who put it out, but the statement was from the entire football team, basically 4 or 5 graphs defending Pat Fitzgerald, and that is I don't want to say a bad word, but that is an embarrassment that it was written and put out, and that some people in the media, journalists, actually put this out as a press release. Like the whole football team endorsed this, wrote it, signed it, or whatever. That is ridiculous. It should have never been put forward by a real journalist. It's embarrassing that
it
that
was
put
now,
out.
Now, I, again, without like too many specifics here, wasn't it like a leadership council or something that put, like, I guess it's a group.
I don't know, but saying that this is a statement from the entire football team is complete and utter trash. That's not true.
I was under the impression the statement you're talking about was from a group of players that had been elected to some sort of leadership position within the team to speak for them, and they had signed the statement sort of representing the team. But I know what you mean. I would not to mention like the amount of control that Pat Fitzgerald has over, you know, the amount of control that any college football or college coach has over their players. I think that it matters to an extent what Pat Fitzgerald's current players are saying about the situation, but it's not the only thing. You know, it matters that they're standing by him, and if players are standing by Pat Fitzgerald, like that's...
This is how Adam Renneberg said it ESPN. Okay, he's a journalist for ESPN. Statement from Northwestern's entire team pushing back against allegations of hazing, et cetera, et cetera. So he's saying the statement is from the entire team, which is just an absolute lie, okay? First of all, there's no way an entire team can give a statement. And if somebody at the university or within the media relations or whatever tried to go around and get players to agree to some statement, that's absolutely disgusting that they would try to do that, because then you're pushing kids to agree to something they may or may not agree with. And then for a journalist to put that out there like every player on the team is making the statement is I just don't have good words for it. It's just really terrible thing to do, and I just can't believe they would do something like that.
And you know, and I think a couple of things about the story that are, I mean, you can, like, I think it's remarkable that student journalists broke the story. And I think
Northwestern has one of the best journalism schools in the country.
And it's a testament to the work they're doing. And I wonder, not just at Auburn, but at a lot of places around college athletics, I wonder if it would have been more difficult to report a story like this about the or a marquee program. You know what I mean? Like, if something like this were going on at a big-time SEC school, could the student journalists at the newspaper report it as freely and with the kind of, like, would there be pushback from figures within the university? Like, I don't know. Like, it's quality journalism, and kudos to Northwestern for having the kind of students that can break this story. Yes. I do wonder if it's like, man, at a bigger school, is this story getting broken by the student journalists, or if it
maybe.
Is it maybe?
It just depends.
And it's impossible to know for sure. But that's not to say that there aren't good student journalists working at, you know, around college athletics everywhere. But yeah, that's because it's a story that paints. If you've read the story in the Daily Northwestern, you know what I'm talking about. I don't want to get into the more graphic aspects of it, but it does not paint the football program
in a good
light. Like that is a It is a story that, it's something that's damaging, and yeah, I can see why Northwestern is maybe taking a second look at what Pat Fitzgerald, his standing within the program now after that, and I wonder if I get that feeling that it's trending towards over. Like I think this could be a thing where even someone who has built that kind of reputation and standing in
hold on, I think we have an update. Hold on, let me check this. I think we have an update right there.
Okay, so I'll tell you what, we'll take.
Yep, yep. Pat Fitzgerald fired at Northwestern.
Pat Fitzgerald has lost his job.
All right. Yep.
So we'll come back and we'll talk about this and stick around. You are listening to the Monday edition of The Drive.
Hey, I'm Caroline Bush from Bush
502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Final segment of the show. Brian, it's flown by with you.
It really has.
I do appreciate you. It was easier with you than it would have been without you today. With Bill taking the day off, he'll be back tomorrow. And we had some, And by the way, we should update what you were just saying, Brian. Northwestern has fired ESPN co or ESPN reporting now. Pete Thamel first from ESPN to put his name on it, but Pat Fitzgerald has been let go as the head coach of Northwestern after more details came out about hazing allegations and the university sort of backpedaling on a 2-week suspension. Now the news coming out that Pat Fitzgerald has lost his job at Northwestern, that coming in the last 10 15 minutes or so. So Brian, we will be next week. We will be in Nashville for Media Days. Really looking forward to it. Hugh Freeze's first SEC Media Days
as an Auburn coach.
Head coach. He made multiple appearances there when he was at Ole Miss. But now representing Auburn University, should be an exciting time when he takes the stage on Tuesday afternoon. Luke Deal, Cam Stutz, and Elijah McAllister, the three Auburn players selected to represent the university on Tuesday. So, yeah, hopefully you're here Monday.
I should be. At the most, I'll go up Monday night.
Yeah, and I'll be able to beam in. I'll be able to beam in from Nashville on Monday. Of course, we'll have wall to wall coverage here on ESPN 106.7 of SEC Media Days with the Max Roundtable on the line and the Drive, all broadcasting live from Radio Row. Bill's going to be here in the studio. I'm going to be broadcasting live. Yeah, if you come in the studio, then Monday's show could be a lot of fun. I think it'll be LSU. And I forget the other two schools off the top of my head on Monday. SC Media. I want to say A&M maybe is going as well on that first day. So yeah, a couple of high profile coaches, Jimbo Fisher and Brian Kelly, will be taking the podium. LSU. I mean, I think they're going to be the pick to win the West, right? And that's it's not. I mean, in the Saban era, I think it's, more often than not, maybe the 10 of the 15, he's been picked to win the West at SEC Media Days. You know, it's rare for a team other than Alabama to be picked by the media at SEC Media Days to be the West champion. But I don't think with what LSU brings back, I mean, I'm guessing that LSU is the pick.
Probably. I'm not overwhelmed by LSU in the preseason, or Alabama, to be honest, but or anybody in the West.
Got to pick somebody,
right? Yeah. So we'll see. But yeah, that's probably going to be the pick. But West could be fun this year. We'll see.
There's less, unless you love Tennessee, I guess, there's less intrigue in the East because Georgia, appears to be a somewhat overwhelming favorite.
Well, Georgia does have to replace their quarterback. But they have had tons of draft picks over the last 2 years. Even though they've recruited so well, it can be difficult to replace that many great players. I know they did it last year, but this is another year.
And,
and
quarterback is, when teams start to take a slip, teams at the top start to take a step back, often it's because they misfire at the quarterback position. Often they can't replace a run of highly successful quarterbacks with another one, and it starts to it starts to either move in reverse or slow down, and it's not what it was before. So yeah, Georgia, even if the quarterbacks in question were very highly touted coming out of high school, and the rest of the roster is full of guys
they'll be the most talented team in the league,
right? Even with that, they're still
don't want to disrespect them.
I mean, no one thought they could do it.
Curry might tell the team that they're being disrespected.
No one thought the defending national champions could win the championship again.
That's right.
No one
most disrespected team in college football.
No one believed in you, reigning national champion, that you could maybe do it again. That is, I guess, if there is a question mark there, it's the fact that they're leaning on somebody who hasn't played a ton of college football to be the quarterback of a team that goes into the season as the favorite, not just to win the league, but to win a third straight national championship, which would be unprecedented in the world of college football. So yeah, a lot of storylines next week. You got coaches like Napier, and for that matter, I'd say Jimbo Fisher, who are feeling some pressure going into the season. I mean, Jimbo's got
a new offensive coordinator.
He's got a new offensive coordinator.
Might be battling with him a little bit.
He might be. I don't know if he's got the luxury to battle with him. They got six games. They got six games in the first half of the year. Three or four of them are must wins.
Dudes get heated on the sidelines sometimes. You just can't control yourself.
Oh boy, AuburnSports.com.
Yeah, I've heard of it. Pretty good site. Yeah. Check me out on at BMADAU on Twitter and Threads.
And Threads.
Threads.
I'm Daniel Allen Peck on Threads.
There you go.
Two L and an E in the Allen.
You got to hedge your bets, right? You don't know what's going to happen.
I like Threads. Yeah. I got to be real with you. Yeah. Early on, I like it.
Fastest growing site of all time.
Reminds me when the new movie theater opened up in my town and people stopped going to the old one.
Yeah.
Watch out. Bill's back tomorrow. Barrett Salee, Jake Crane. You're not going to want to miss that. Stick around. Oh, Home Run Derby coverage here on ESPN Radio. Don't miss that. It's The Drive. Good night.